Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back, Cody. Oh, man. We are coming off Thanksgiving week. All kinds of food shenanigans. Did you get into the food debauchery this week?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what more is there to Thanksgiving than food? I mean, it's all about, like, it's fun because my family, we talked about it a little bit when Kyle was on, that we do, like, the four meats. We're all about, like, the entree part of it. But my wife's family, on the other hand, is all about the sides, right? They have the one meat. They have the traditional turkey. It's bathing, right? Because if you serve a turkey, like, it might as well be turkey soup. It has to be drenched in some kind of liquid to keep it moist, right? They also had dark meat in there, too, and that's just the best kind of turkey. But they do all of the sides, right? A lot of side action out there. So I kind of like that. It's a nice balance. I wouldn't want to go to the same kind of Thanksgiving dinner twice. What are your go-to Thanksgiving eats when it comes time for that?
You mean like the potatoes on the side, things like that?
What kind of potatoes? What kind?
A palm puree, you know, like a nice French buttery potato.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah, and then maybe some stuffing. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between stuffing and dressing. Dressing is inside the bird. Stuffing is out. This is one of the great starts to a podcast in the history of basketball. You know what's tomorrow, Cody?
Describe the stuffing to me. What kind? Do you go kind of fun there? Do you put a little apple in that stuffing? Do you put a little fruit action in there? Like, what?
I don't know, man.
Like?
I don't know. It's stuffing. I don't know. Look, tomorrow is the last group stage of the NBA Cup. Ooh. Have you looked at the possibilities for who could advance to the single elimination round? I'm not going to call it March Madness. What should we call it? Like November Nuisance? Like what? It's going to get a little, it's going to get crazy. Go ahead. What are you going
to
say?
I was just trying to think of a better nuisance word there, but I don't know. It's not working right now. But what I was going to say is, like, we've talked about this. Like, I'll watch it. I've been watching those games, and I do think the intensity is up a little bit. But in terms of, like, keeping track of who's winning what and who's out of what and who's going to move on, I have, like, you could tell me that, like, the Wizards are about to move on, and I'd be like, yep, sounds like it. Daniel Gafford averaging the Wilt Chamberlain-type numbers. But I'm not really sure what's going on.
Okay, you're Milwaukee Bucks. Hey. They can win the group or the wild card. They can get through that way. But the Magic can also win their group or the wild card, even though they're done playing. It totally depends on what all the other teams do, like Boston and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So Boston can still win the group or the wild card. Brooklyn can win the group or the wild card. Cleveland can get in. Philadelphia is 2-2. They're not eliminated. I mean, pretty much half the Eastern Conference is still, depending on what happens with like three games and the point differential. There's some hilarious point differential things where, like, you know, you got to win by like 29 and then hope Miami only beats Milwaukee by 13 or something. It's going to be, we need a live tracker. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying we need a big board. Maybe not a big board because it's a November group stage of the first ever NBA in-season tournament. So maybe like a small board. We need a small board and we keep track of it. So you have no picks because I remember before the tournament, you were very excited about Denver and they are gone. They're out.
Are they really? Wait, they're out?
Yeah, they're eliminated.
No way. Okay. Yeah. That's exciting. Yeah. That's cool.
Are you at all worried about Denver with this Jamal Murray-less stretch? Or is this just confirming to you once again that Jamal Murray is the greatest player to have never made an all-star game? And if he just misses a little bit more time with this hamstring, he will continue to troll the universe and be like an all-NBA level Hall of Fame player who's not going to make an... What if he didn't make the all-star team again this year, Cody? What if that happened?
How many games did he miss last year? Because I do know the games where he did play, he was ramping up for a lot of the season. And I think that was a big part of the conversation. It was like, well, the Nuggets have a chance if Jamal Murray like gets to like 80% of bubble Jamal Murray. And I think by the time we got to the playoffs, we started seeing like, oh, this is the Jamal Murray of lore, of which we've been speaking for eons. So, you know, I just don't even remember how often he played last year. So I don't know what I can compare to. Compared to last year, I guess.
Well, I think the bigger issue last year was the health and the recovery coming off of the major injury. And like the first third or half of the season was a challenge and it was bumpy in that ramping up process. But he played 65 of 82 games last year, also known as playing the maximum amount of games that a star could play before they instituted. I like these new rules. I feel like the players are playing now. I feel like, yes, you have the occasional back-to-back night off, but when I turn on the game, players are typically playing unless they're the Phoenix Suns.
I mean, I think that's mostly a Brad Beal thing. I don't think we've seen him yet. I got a shout out for a second to the Clippers over on the west side of the United States. I think both Kawhi and Paul George have played every game so far. I think I saw that neither of them have missed a single game. Props to them. That's pretty cool. I have no idea if the rules that were instituted have anything to do with that. Honestly, I very much doubt that that had anything to do with it. I think they're like, you know what? We're healthy. We actually like playing basketball, so how about we do that more? But I don't know. If that rule is actually part of the reason that we're seeing a lot of these star players playing more, great. I love to see it.
So, De'Aaron Fox is back in Sacramento. They're playing well.
Yep.
Your Minnesota Timberwolves are currently in the pole position in the West. They're the number one seed. They're playing well. The Oklahoma City Thunder with Chet Holmgren. We're going to have to talk about what's going on with his rookie season at some point, because that guy is ridiculously good for a first-year player. They're playing well. They're at the top of the conference. And all these teams have won like 7 of 10, 8 of 10 games, or in the case of the Kings, they're, I think, 7-3 with Fox in the lineup. These other teams have won 8 out of 10. Some of them have long winning streaks. And the last team in that group was the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic, who are back to playing the theme song before some of the games, by the way, they are like, what, second or third in the East? They've won a ton of games in a row. I think it's their longest winning streak in 13 years. Since the Dwight Howard, Stan Van Gundy era, Orlando Magic, it's been quite a long time. So my question to you, Cody, today, I thought we'd play a little game. Play a little game. Let's do it this way. Do you believe in any of these teams? Do you believe in these win streaks, in these young and up-and-coming clubs that are hot? Do you believe in them? Where would you like to start? You tell me. I want to know if you believe in any of these situations right now with these young clubs.
I think the thoughts about Orlando, if I'm going to determine if I truly believe in them, I think we need to have a talk. We need to talk about them a little bit more.
We're going to start with Orlando?
I think so, because I think I have some complicated thoughts. It's really odd to me that their offense is still underwater. They're still worse than league average. And their defense is like top three in the league. It's one of the three teams that are like better than 6 points, that better than league average on defense. And I don't want to know. I guess that's my question back to you. I'm going to refine your do you believe question and kick it right back to you, Ben. Do you believe in the Magic being a 6 point better than league average defense going forward? Like, what are you seeing that makes you think like, yeah, they can definitely keep this up for the rest of the season? Once they get to the playoffs, they can definitely be a defensive juggernaut. Or are you on the other hand, like, they're good, but I think it's probably going to level down a couple of notches before we end the season.
We have a stat we've added to our board for Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. If you go over and look at the teams, we have adjusted offensive and defensive ratings. And I think that helps get at what you just said, Cody, because the adjustments on defense, they account for things like opponent shooting luck, what's happening when they have a bunch of open threes in games. But also, early in the season, not everybody plays the same schedule. So it adjusts for things like the location of the game and the strength of the opponent, offense or defense. And when you do that, the Magic are still quite good. The third best defense in the league, according to that. But that is a maybe more reflective number of what I see from them, where they're 4 points better than their opponents or soon to be the league, instead of like, what you say, they were technically by raw numbers, they're like the best defense and like 6.5 points better than average or something. Is that right?
Yeah, they're right around there. I think they're still like third in the league, but they're right around the six and a half-ish.
Yeah. And similarly, when you do the same thing with their offense is just a shade above average. So it's not like you're looking at a team with a totally befuddled, stuck in the mud offense and this incredible defense. It's a little more balanced. In fact, I find that when you do these early season adjustments, like for instance, the Pacers no longer look like the greatest offense in the history of the world. We just had the fun video built around that game they played against the Hawks. And the Pacers are super fun and exciting and they're playing fast. And they do have a really good offense. But there is a difference to me between, oh, can this team be 10 points better than league average on offense? Can they have like a 124 offensive rating for the entire year? And when you adjust it, I think they were like +7 as of checking this morning, and you expect those things to possibly regress back toward the mean as the season goes on. So I digress. I'm very interested in these types of numbers early in the year, and I think that's a little bit more where I sit with Orlando. But there is a big question with the Orlando defense before we dive in. And that question is about one of their bench players. But I want to ask you before we get to that question. Okay, I'm going to ask you that in a second. Who's your favorite Orlando Magic guard defender, Cody? Which defender do you like the best out of the guys they throw out there to just completely hound opponents?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ben, Jalen Suggs has to be one of the most exciting, electrifying defensive guards to watch in all of the NBA. Like, I don't even necessarily know. I think this is going to be a bigger question that I'll build up to maybe in a couple points here or so. I don't necessarily know if he's like an all NBA defensive type of player, but his motor when he's on the court, it shows up in like his crashing the offensive glass. It shows up in him just hounding people full court and him being able to recover across the entire court. He's like, oh, I'm going to show here and I'm going to sprint because somebody in the corner isn't being covered here. It shows in him being able to meet people at the rim. And, you know, he's got the vertical athleticism, the horizontal athleticism. And then, like I just said, the motor is absolutely ridiculous. So to me, it's easily, I don't want to say easily, because Markel Fultz in general is just like a cool, funky player, but he hasn't played for a little bit. So because of that, we're going to put him on the back burner and say Jalen Suggs.
Yeah, he's remarkable. And does he remind you a little bit? I don't know. I think he's in this like next lineage of the Alex Caruso, like, you know, Jason Kidd light. You know, he's just like, he can pass. He's fast. He pushes in transition. And then defensively, he's big for a guard. I don't know what they list him at, but he plays big. He's like 6'4", something like that. And he's very physical. He's very strong. So he can switch and guard different positions. But then getting around screens and getting into the ball, really, really good at staying connected, or again, being physical as he navigates around a screen, has really active hands, has a high IQ. There's one play against the Pacers where they have like a 4-on-2 in transition or something, shoot it down the court, it looks like it's going to be a layup, and then he, you know, he throws a paw up and deflects the pass and sends it the other way. I mean, he has a lot of plays like this where he's reading the court, and I think all of the Magic guards are good at getting up into you. Cole Anthony does this a little bit. He's played more with Fultz being out. And then, man, Anthony Black. Have we fawned over Anthony Black yet? I mean, that guy, he's legitimately a very good defender as a rookie and extremely versatile in his own right.
Okay, so let's look at their guard rotation right now, because we have, what was it? There's Markel Fultz, who, like I said, hasn't been playing a bit because he's injured. I think he has a knee injury right now. You have Gary Harris, Anthony Black. You have Anthony's name is, I'm like Carmelo Anthony, but it's not Carmelo Anthony. It's this is terrible because I really like the guy. What's
Anthony's
first
name?
Who are
we talking about? Cole.
Cole. Thank you. Yeah. I knew it was a C.
A Cole Anthony Black thing. Yeah.
Carmelo Anthony Black. Now we just have like too many. This is the issue, and you just write down last names of players to remember. All of a sudden, like every single player ever that has had that last name just comes to mind. So let's run through it again. You have Markel Fultz, you have Gary Harris, Anthony Black, you have Cole Anthony, you have Jalen Suggs. Okay? I don't, like, I'm looking at that, and I don't think any of those guards are a negative on D. And I don't know if there's any other team in the NBA that can run a full guard, like a full five guard line. I'm not saying that they're all going to play at the same time, but no matter if the bench is on, if the starters are on, you're going to have a plus D guard out there. Off the top of your head, Ben, how would you rank them in terms of who's actually the best defender here? Because I know guard defense gets really tough to separate because you're not necessarily bringing the rim protection chops. The size is always kind of an issue. But if you were to be like, this guy's the best, and you go down to the person who's not the best, because I'm not going to say worst amongst this group, but how would you even rank these guys?
Suggs, one. Mm-hmm. I'm going Anthony Black, two.
You're going the rookie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Come on.
Oh, you're going Anthony Black, two. Wow.
Anthony Black, two. And then it gets weird because, like, I could go either way on Fultz or Cole Anthony. Maybe it's just because I haven't seen Fultz in a while, but Cole Anthony's put together really nice possessions, and I feel like Fultz has similar skills in terms of navigating screens or staying in front of the ball. He's a little lengthier. But here's the thing with the Magic defense, Cody. Mm-hmm. They are extremely versatile. They are extremely big and long. So they have this length that they can use all over the court. And when you get lineups like Suggs and Anthony Black, then no one's small. Paolo Bancaro, Franz Wagner, Goga Batadze is playing. Did I say Wagner? What happened there? It's Franz Wagner.
That was awesome.
Too many foreign words in one sentence for me there. But like Goga Batadze, who's filled in for Wendell Carter Jr., who's another good defender, there aren't really any weaknesses. And they're very versatile. They can switch and cover different positions. I mean, sometimes they'll take Suggs and he'll guard like someone like Jason Tatum for stretches. And they're really strong, so they don't get bullied when someone tries to take them down in the post. And then they have all this length because of their size. And the length allows them, the thing that really jumps out to me when I watch the film, it allows them to shrink the floor. Meaning when that ball is inside 15 feet and someone's posting up or they need to send an extra defender to overload, you have players close to the ball, close to the paint, and then they can recover. And then they can rotate and get back to the shooter, get back to a skip pass. And they fly around and they're pretty good at communicating and knowing where to go. Like, I'm going to double the post, okay? The guy that comes and doubles the post, he's not going to recover to his man. He's going to fly across the court to someone else, and it's all beautifully coordinated. The length and the athleticism and the versatility, it all fits together to make possessions difficult for opposing teams, because what do you attack and how do you have, you just don't have as many easy baskets when you have these guys out on the court. Like Bancaro and Franz Wagner are your forwards you have to meet at the rim when they rotate behind the play. And as you said, guys like Black and Suggs, when they're scrambling all over the court, one of those guards is even big enough to cause problems protecting the hoop at the end of the play. So, it's really impressive.
A key aspect, too, that their guards, all of the guards are able to do that helps them not get kind of in these mismatches or get scrambled or have to communicate too much, is they're all excellent at chasing and dodging picks. Like, I'm thinking back to that Celtics game, and the Celtics love running a bunch of double staggers, right? And I think a lot of teams, usually when there's some kind of double stagger, there's going to be some kind of switching. Like, maybe the middle defender is going to jump out, stop the action from coming, and then maybe there's going to be a switch in there. Usually these guys are quick enough and agile enough and small enough that they can just kind of like boop, boop, and then there's no switch. And then the Celtics are like, oh crap, should we run it back? Should we try and get that switch? And sometimes if there is a switch, like it's maybe near the end, maybe they get past the first screen and on the second screen they get caught, and then they just automatically switch that, right? And then if there is a switch, you know, I did notice, I thought at the beginning of the game when Jalen Suggs was on Tatum, I thought Tatum really did a good job of throwing around that new, you know, his weight room down in the post. I thought he did a good job of bullying him down there, but Jason Tatum's a very big person, right? So Jalen Suggs is big. Jason Tatum is much bigger than he is, and he was able to kind of not like throw him down into the rim, but definitely back him down and get a better shot. And I think the interesting thing with the aggression is I did notice, like, I felt like the Magic are really good at shrinking some of these driving lanes, right? Like, somebody's handling, somebody's going to be hedging over a little bit, and they're like, you know what, we're going to stop this guy from getting in the paint. But I thought, especially in that first half against the Celtics, I thought that opened them up to a lot of backdoor type cuts, right? Like, I think Jaylen Brown had a huge dunk after a beautiful pass from Kristaps Porzingis. I forgot who it was that got back cut at that point. Joe Ingles was back cut a couple times. We could talk about Ingles here in just a second. But I thought most of the guys, even though I think they're all very aware defensively, were kind of caught in no man's land a couple of times when these guys were making these back cuts. I don't know if that's a Celtics thing. I don't know if that's a Magic thing, kind of giving up the backside, which would be a weird thing to do to take away the driving lane. But those are some of the things I was noticing. Ultimately, that chasing ability of all of their guards just makes them so flexible and not having to rely on the switch every possession.
Yeah, I think there's some subtle things there that they could still improve. I mean, it's not perfect every possession. I mean, this is a young team, so I think it's already pretty impressive for being a young team. But, I mean, let me give you an example. Off of a miss, when the offense is empty for the Magic and they get back on defense in transition, they do a great job of hustling and communicating and matching up. And if you actually go look on our, I mentioned our stats board earlier, we track what happens after an empty possession for an offensive team. And the league average defensive rating after you have a live ball miss, that's either a turnover or a missed shot, is 120. So when you miss in a live ball situation, you have a rebound or you have a turnover, very, very efficient offense coming back the other way. The Magic are literally the number one defense in the league after their offense has a live ball miss. And I told you the league average offensive rating was 120, Cody. Defensive rating. The Magic defensive rating after a miss is 107. It's 5 points better than the next best team. So I think this speed, this length, this youthful exuberance, it shows up there in that situation. And then let's go full circle. I said I was going to hold this question for you, and now I think it's time to ask it. I don't think they can be like a top-notch defense, like a absolute world-beating, going to be the best defense in the league, unless they play this guy more. Why doesn't Jonathan Isaac play more than like 15 minutes a game right now? Because when he's on the court, he's got these like defensive player of the year level vibes where he can guard anybody. Comes in the Celtics game, they put him on Kristaps Porzingis. Porzingis goes out of the game, they stick him on Jason Tatum. Poor Jason had to deal with Jonathan Isaac hounding him for parts of that game. He's super versatile. He can guard big players, he can guard wings, he can protect the basket, he can switch. All these guys can switch. His length helps off the ball when we talked about shrinking the floor when he's on the weak side, and then he can recover and make plays and block shots. I think with him they might be the best defense in the league if he played heavy minutes. It's just so many good defensive players. What do you think? Why isn't he playing more?
Well, I think the key, like what you just said, they could be the best defensive players. Outside of him, I don't know if anyone else on the team is somebody that I would put up for all-defensive team, right?
Well, so Suggs maybe. What do you think?
I'm not sure if I'm quite there yet. I would need to really lay out all the other guards. But I guess with like Marcus Smart missing a bunch of time and just like the Grizzlies, you know, not looking great right now, there's an open spot for the guard position. So I'd have to think about it, but I'm not sold on that. Jonathan Isaac, to me, like if he played 25 minutes a game, is like a lot, a shoo-in for all-defensive team. And he set that tone right away, first game of the season, where I think he met Jalen Green twice at the rim in like the same half. One of them a huge dunk. Maybe it was Jalen Green. I'm not sure. It was a Rockets player, but he blocked both of them at the rim. One of them this huge dunk. The other one was a layup, right? And I think that's a key part of him, is he's able to bring that enormous rim protection. I don't remember what the numbers are, but he's contesting a fair amount of shots at the rim, and he's holding teams, or he's holding players to shooting significantly worse than their actual percentage when he's hanging out by the rim. All right, so that's, you know, as for why he's not playing more, Ben, there are times where there's like, I don't know, 14 seconds left on the shot clock, and he's like, I'm going to take this above the break three, and he misses wide by like 2 feet. And he's just kind of like skating around, and I don't really trust his handle. So like offensively, he brings a lot of baggage in terms of like, what can you do with this guy? But it's interesting because on the other side of the coin, Joe Ingles is like the opposite of Jonathan Isaac, right? So when Joe Ingles is on the court, their offensive rating's like 122. Like, this is a substantial amount of minutes. We're talking like 300 plus minutes. Their offense looks great. And when he's off the court, they're like 107. Their offense looks terrible. So you have one guy that's like, Joe Ingles is probably the best passer on the team. right? I don't know about the shooting, but in terms of like pick and roll creation and things like that, he brings a juice that the rest of the team doesn't have. But defensively, post his injury, him getting a little bit older in his age, he doesn't have the defensive chops that he used to have. And Jonathan Isaac is just like, if you could like merge them together into one player, I mean, I guess we're talking like a MVP candidate at that point. But I think that's a really interesting yin and yang that they have together there. So that's probably why you can't trust Jonathan Isaac on offense. But I think in the regular season, you might as well play him more and see what kind of defense, what the heights you can bring your defense to with him out there is.
Well, right now it's only about 200 minutes into the season for Isaac, and the Magic's on-court defensive rating when he plays is 99. They are giving up 99 points per 100 possessions. No one is even close to that. No other Magic player is even close to that. So I think with him out there, they are incredible. Without him, they are still a very good defense, and it's going to make them pretty competitive, I think, for the rest of the season.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, well, before we go to another team, I have yet to hear whether you believe in the Magic or not. Do you believe in the Magic as what did you ask originally? A top three defense, or I don't remember how you phrased it.
Yeah, I love the Magic team, man. I love them. And I think like if you look at the top 12 guys that are getting minutes, there's maybe like one, maybe two guys that are negative. That's incredible. That are negative on D. So I'm not sure, Ben. I don't know if I buy them being 6 points better than league average. I think you're probably right that they'll probably hover around like the 4-3. I don't know if that puts them top five or top six, but I don't quite know if they're gonna. I don't know if I'm buying the top three defense by the end of the season.
Okay, so the most exuberance maybe we've ever had for a segment on this show. Cody could probably do 2.5 more hours on Goga Batase's screen navigation. His hedging and dropping combination that he's been using, and his with Wendell Carter Jr. out, and yet I think we both don't believe that the Magic are 6.5 points better. Although my caveat is, I think if Jonathan Isaac plays big minutes, I think they could be that good defensively. Let's go to the next team.
Okay,
let's go to the next team. The Minnesota Timberwolves. Mm. They have the one seed. Mm-hmm. They have the one seed. Do you believe in Minnesota finishing the season with the one seed?
Wow, do I believe? You know, I think it's a possibility. I'm. If I say I believe, that just means I think it can happen, right? So yeah, I'm going to say I believe in it. I think there's a pretty solid chance that this team can do it. Rudy Gobert still looks great. Interestingly, Gobert doesn't have like the super high relative true shooting percentage that I'm used to from past years. Like, I don't necessarily know what's going on exactly. It doesn't seem like they've worked out all the kinks offensively between him and Towns and working it all together. And I guess that's reflected in the fact that their offense is just rolling over league average. But again, they're kind of like the Magic, where you have this really strong defense, and then the offense is, I don't know, I would maybe expect it to be a little bit better considering they have Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns, but unlike the Magic, they have two guys that I would very easily consider to be all D types of players, and Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels. So to me, that's a key part of it. What have you seen recently from them that makes you think that either they will or will not continue being a one seed?
Well, the West is very close. The best West is very competitive. And so I think it's just as much about Minnesota as the other teams, meaning Minnesota is good and they can continue to win a lot of games. Health might factor in, but I don't I think what I don't believe in yet is that they are, and we talked about this with Inner Circle title contenders recently, I don't believe they have a margin of victory over the rest of the league yet that it's like, if they don't finish in the one slot, they're going to finish second or something. It's more like they're in a group that is going to win a lot of regular season games and that might be able to hold the one seed. I mean, look at Denver, right? If Jamal Murray doesn't come back, Denver might not pick up enough wins to get the one seed. We've talked about Phoenix. Phoenix is starting to come on. We don't know what their health is going to be like now or the entire season. We don't know if they're going to be good enough in general to just play at like a 60-win pace when they're all healthy and churn out wins that way. And then there's other teams kind of in the ballpark there. Oklahoma City, we're going to talk about next in a second. So I think I believe that Minnesota is really good. How'd you phrase it? To your point, like, if it could happen, then we believe in it. Maybe I believe in it. Yeah. I believe in it. Yeah.
It sounds offensive to the Magic. We're like, we do not believe that they could have a defense that's 6 points better than league average. But it seems more reasonable to expect this sort of performance from the Timberwolves because, man, the Phoenix thing. So, Ben, I really haven't watched much. I don't want to jump to a different team. I don't want to talk about them. I haven't watched much of the Suns because in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to watch until all three of them are out there. And then all three of them are never out there. But then they start being successful, so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But yeah, I don't know. The Timberwolves just seem like they're a team that's got it figured out, and they're gonna keep rolling. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they end up. What did I say at the beginning of the season? Top three.
That's looking pretty good. Yeah. Every week we move on to a new topic on the show. If you're a new listener, thanks for joining us. If you're still listening, it's like a miracle at this point, given the things we talk about these days. If you missed the season preview, every week we just talk about a new topic, and then we have to go back and acknowledge that Cody's like Nostradamus in the season preview. He had the Orlando Magic defense being elite. He had the Minnesota Timberwolves being in the top three. It's looking pretty good.
You know who I want to shower some love on in terms of the Timberwolves, Ben? We should talk about Kyle Anderson for a second. I don't know if you are privy to just how awesome Kyle Anderson is as a role player. I mean, this guy's passing chops. I don't know what the numbers look like, but I swear every time I watch him, he's throwing some kind of lob just out of nowhere. Like some loping, slow lob that gets exactly to where it needs to go. Defensively, he's just a big body. You know, we obviously know he's not the quickest guy, but I think horizontally, he's quick enough to guard some of these bigger forwards and wings and whatnot. He can give you a little bit of protection at the rim. I don't necessarily know what the numbers are. I don't know if they're shocking anything, but every time I watch, Kyle Anderson is just doing wonderful things. And I wouldn't be surprised if his like on-off stuff was just off the charts because every time I watch, I'm like, this is like one of the most invaluable players on the Timberwolves. And I think, I don't want to say he's key to the regular season success, but he is driving a lot of what they're doing by just being like a perfect cog to everything that's going on around him.
Let's talk about the Thunder, Cody. They're pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty good. They are currently in the second position at 11-5. They have won a ton of games in a row until losing to Philadelphia the other night by 4. And they have this guy, Chet. And it's like if you took the team before the year and you said, what does this team need, right? What does this team need? Okay, maybe it needs like a Tim Duncan-y kind of guy on defense. Doesn't hurt to have that in there. And then maybe it needs like a, I don't know, how would you describe Chet's game on offense? I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like, would you like Pau Gasol shooting threes or something? Yeah, it's a pretty good fit.
So let me ask you one of our questions then. Do you believe, Ben, in Chet Holmgren being a 41% three-point shooter on wide-open threes?
41% three-point shooter on wide-open threes. I am going to say I believe it.
You do?
Yes, I believe in it, Cody. Yeah, I mean, you can't get... If it's 40% at the end of the year, I think that counts. But I think that the essence of where he is. Now, league average wide open threes. This is just stunning. The human beings can do this. We should stop the show. We should do an entire episode. We should get scientists on the show and we should talk about shooting form. And you know, there's like a YouTube video. I'm trying to think of who did it, one of these science channels about how it's impossible to shoot more than 92% from the line or something. That. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got the little thumbnail with the arc, and then they talk about, like, physics and the space that the ball can go in the hoop and, you know, human error and things like that. Well, Cody, NBA players are averaging almost 39% on their wide-open threes this season.
Oh, my God.
It just keeps going up. It used to be, like, 38%. Now they're up flirting with 39%. We'll see if that can hold for the entire year. But I think when I look at Chet, I think he's an above average shooter. I believe in the shot. What's he shooting from the free throw line? It's fantastic, right?
Wasn't he shooting 90%? I thought at one point he was like hovering around 90%. And if that's the case, I definitely believe in it. Going back to that shooting video, I think a big part of that, the conceit of that video, was like Elena Deledon of the WNBA. She shot like 95%. Maybe for a couple of seasons, basically just like breaks the human mind. So that's a pretty cool thing. But Chet, tell me, were you able to look it up? Is he shooting 90% from the free throw line?
Chet's 88%.
88?
Yeah. Yeah. So I believe, okay. Cody. I believe in Chet's shooting. And the interesting thing at this point, I think, is like how legitimately good are the Thunder? Do you believe that they could also finish with the one seed?
So the thing about the Thunder, and this goes for pretty much any combination of the players that you can, is that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander right now is a plus-minus god for the Thunder, right? Maybe I shouldn't say a god, because I feel like when we say that, that means you're like near the plus 20, but I think his like on-off has to be like plus 15-ish. And I don't care if you pair him with Jalen Williams, you look at the on-off with him paired with Chet Holmgren, it kind of doesn't matter. No matter who's around him, the Thunder are just really good when he's on the court. And I don't necessarily know. Like, part of me wants to be like, oh, the reason that the Thunder are so good is because, like, yeah, obviously they have all this passing going on and they're able to get this movement and whatever else. But it seems like a lot of their success right now this season hinges on Shai's ability to just, like, draw free throws, get to the basket, do these, which is, like, it makes sense. Obviously their best player is going to be the reason that they're so successful. But I don't know if it makes the team feel, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, maybe a little less egalitarian than I want them to be. And I think that makes me nervous in terms of, like, can they sustain that based just on Shai's brilliance throughout the entire season?
Well, they set the floor up very well for Shai to succeed. We have, before the season started, our video coordinator, Mike De La Rosa, took a look on the YouTube channel at the way they set screens and the way that that is able to activate these guard-guard actions. I think that's very sustainable. I think the league can have a hard time with that. Now, if you're asking about playoff setting, that might be different. But, you know, we only asked here about, do you believe in the regular season? And I think in the regular season, the system that they've set up allows that to be something that will be consistent from night to night. Furthermore, if you look at, like, I'm pulling up our board here in the background, and Shai is plus 12.5 when he's on the court. So the Thunder are, they're at their best when he's on the floor. But, you know, there are other players up near, like Chet is plus 10, Isaiah Joe is plus 12, Cason Wallace, we talked about last episode with Kyle Mann from The Ringer, he's plus 8. So I don't think it's the kind of thing where there's like one player they're crazy relying on, like 2021 Jokic or something like that, with just a team that is spinning around him. I do think the system there, and especially with another player of Chet's quality, makes them a formidable opponent from night to night. Yeah.
Let me ask you something. I don't know if you've watched closely enough to be able to answer this, but you look at some of the on-offs for Shai across his career. And, like, on offense, they're plus 7.7 on-off with Shai, right? So the offense is 7 points better. 7.7 points per 100 possessions better when he's on versus off. That's pretty consistent from what we've seen across, like, the last five seasons with him. Like, this makes a lot of sense. But on the other side of the court, defensively, this is the first season in his career where the defense is actually better when he's on the court versus off the court. And it's usually been like 3 points worse, 3.5 points worse, almost 7 points worse when he's on the court. But right now, this season, it's almost 5.5 points better when he's on the court. And part of that, I mean, not just part of that, that's like about half juicing the on-off numbers that we're seeing from Shea. So are you seeing, like, have you seen a huge jump defensively from Shea this season? Or do you think, like, in general, do you think the Thunder's defense looks a lot better for any reason? Is there systematic things that they're running that's kind of insulating a little bit more? Or do you think there's maybe some kind of numerical anomaly going on there?
I love how you went from a 10-game stats embargo to 15 games of plus minus compared to the last 4 years. That happened very quickly. That escalated very quickly.
Listen, the numbers are available. Once I take it, you know, like, here's the thing. When you have a kid and the kid's like running around and you don't ever let them have any candy, right? Listen, you don't get anything. But then you like let them go and you throw them in a candy store and you're like, do whatever you want. I'm not going to watch for the next 20 minutes. That kid's going to go crazy, right?
Is this what happened in your childhood? It was no candy and then 20 minutes alone in the candy store?
No, this is what happened in my adulthood when I didn't allow myself stats.
Oh.
So I am the kid in the candy store. PBTB stats. I didn't even say the right. I think I said a D in there. That was wild. But I am the kid in the candy store just going crazy with, like, I can't get enough of them. And I know it's a small sample size and whatever, but 10 games, 15 games, we're getting somewhere. Like, it's starting to tell us some things, Ben.
It's noisy. It's noisy. So 86% of this answer is noise. The numbers will change as the samples get larger. 86. But I do think that this is Shea's best defensive season easily. Mm. Yeah. I mean, he's always had the length thing and the size, which has helped him the most. But everything's just a little sharper. And that makes a big difference and makes a big deal when you're a guard out on the perimeter and you want fewer breakdowns. That's essentially, and they don't have to be overt breakdowns, but there's a scale. Think about what we were talking about with the Magic earlier. Like, Suggs and Caruso and guys like that are over on one extreme end, which is it's hard to even get into your actions. We probably should have mentioned that. Like, there are possessions against Orlando where it's like hard to even get into the action sometimes because their ball pressure is so good. All the way down on the other end of the scale is the Matador. You know, like, you just go right by them. They're just a revolving door. Nothing's there. There's no resistance. Shea was never the Matador. Shea, to me, was somewhere in like the 30th percentile of that scale where it's soft and you're missing resistance and there's too much space at times for the player to attack. And he's just tightened that up. Mm-hmm. He's just quicker and more reactive at the point of attack, I think. So I do think you'll see this season be his best defensive season in the numbers. I would not be surprised by that at all.
I'm thinking back to a game recently when they were playing the Warriors, and it was like clutch time. Like, Steph Curry was getting in his bag. He's all like, wah, 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 like in between the legs, and he's like, I'm going to fire up a pull-up three. Shea straight up blocked it. Just straight up blocked it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, if this guy is able to just like bring that together and start, you know, fun fact, by the way, Tyrese Haliburton is like third in the NBA in 3-point blocks per 100 possessions. I found that to be pretty cool. I bet you Shea would be like somewhere in like the top 10-ish, but that's cool. I like players that can block 3-pointers.
Wait, that means Tyrese Haliburton has blocked that like more 3-pointers than most other players? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's really wild. I did not expect to see it when I was perusing the statistical archives.
Are those his only block shots of his career?
I feel like he has a lot of them every time. Listen, at some point we're going to have to like unearth like the Tyrese Haliburton on defense thing. Like, we need to be like Gandalf going to the White City and like going through scrolls for 13 years to figure it out. Cause I have no idea how good this guy is on defense. Sometimes he looks lost. Sometimes he's like contesting people on the perimeter. And I'm like, look at how long this dude is. I'm not really sure. It's confusing to me.
I like that. That was a book reference that Cody threw in there, not a movie reference. That was a book reference. Cause in the book, they talk about all the time that passes. It's one of the big differences in terms of the experience of reading the book and watching the movie, The Lord of the Rings. Like, in the book, like 40 years go by in the journey. And in the movie, it's like next Christmas, we're back.
No, it's like a weekend trip that Gandalf takes. But actually, they come back and Frodo's like, oh, I've lived an entire lifetime. Let's go on an adventure now.
Yeah. I think Sam and him left and then they came back and like his girlfriend was like 6 weeks older or something like that. It was a big difference. Tyrese Haliburton, Cody.
Yep.
We as I said, we just had the video on the Thinking Basketball YouTube channel. 129 offensive rating. We talked about that recently when he's on the court. That is just insane. The defensive rating when he's on the court is 122. He's in the ninth percentile. So, you know, a lot of offense and not much defense going on there. So tip of the cap for the 3-point block stat.
Yeah, doesn't seem to be moving the needle too much. Sorry, I was like hesitating for a second because I'm like, it's interesting that so many people are like movie people, but I just don't hear enough book references on podcasts. It makes me sad. I think there needs to be like more like, you know, Jason Mott references. You know, we need to get some more, you know, Jennifer Egan references in these podcasts. Anyway, So Tyrese Haliburton, here's my question for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tyrese Haliburton right now is like breaking creation stats. He's breaking basketball. The whole conceit of your like a recent video against the Hawks is that the Pacers are like a video game, right? It's like, how do you defend this? What are you supposed to do? And if you look, like his box creation in the thinkingbasketball.net database is like 24. Like, it doesn't make sense. I don't know if we've ever seen that in a regular season. Last time I checked, his passer rating was over 10. This is a stat that's supposed to, like, stop at 10.
You're just saying numbers. This is just ridiculous.
His BPM, his box plus minus jump.
It's more.
It's ridiculous from last season.
What are you trying to say? Use your words. What are you trying to say?
Ben, do you believe in Tyrese Haliburton being, like, a top 5 offensive player in the league?
Okay. So, Nikola Jokic is number one.
Okay. Oh, we're doing this right now. We're
no. I just.
This.
How can I answer that? I'm answering your question. Nikola Jokic is number one.
I think when most people rank things on podcasts, like it's, you know how songs are like a top 40 and there's like 100 of them. I kind of think that's. But I appreciate you taking it literally.
Oh, you mean I could totally cheat it and just say yes, even though I have like 9 players ahead of them. Is that what you're saying?
Don't do that.
So you want me to do Jokic? You want me? I'm doing it. I can't. Okay. I'm getting mixed messages. I can't tell what you want me to do, which direction you want me to go in right
Nike
now.
Nike it, baby. Do it. Give me your 5.
Okay. No, I don't know what my 5 is. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Jokic has got to be in the group. And who else is really good at offense? Luka Doncic. That's the guy's name I was trying to think of. He's also really good at offense. Let's see. Steph Curry's really good at offense.
Oh, Steph Curry's a good
one. Yeah. Did you forget about him?
I did. I did think about him.
Yeah. Kevin Durant's still very good at offense. Embiid's good at offense. Yeah. Booker's good at offense.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say Trae Young is good at offense. Yeah. I think he's better than some of those guys, though.
Okay. Do you think he can get in the top 5 there?
It feels like he can get in the top 5.
Okay.
Yeah. He's quite good offensively. Like he is exceptionally good. Yeah.
What do you think, like, compared to last year, what are some things that you're seeing that like make the engine go a little bit more? Like, what is Tyrese Haliburton bringing to the table that's like, oh, this is definitely different from what we saw last season?
Am I having deja vu? Did we have this entire conversation at some point this month already?
We talked about Tyrese Haliburton for the most improved thing. We talked about like the snappy passes and whatever else, but I didn't know if anything else solidified in the last couple weeks.
No, I don't think so. I think it's the combination of the Pacers playing with so much pace. That's a fun one. They're the Pacers. They're supposed to play with pace. And they got cool X's and O's. They have a ton of shooters. Actually, let me say something about pace.
Okay.
For anyone who's still listening to us at this point, this episode is total. This episode is drunk on holiday gravy.
This is the best.
Cody's just buzzing because we got some Magic talk in, and he's been wanting to do 2 to 3 hours on the Magic every episode since the beginning of the year. Pace, Cody, to me, is still a little bit of an untapped potential around the league. Because when you look at the Kings last year, the ball goes through the basket. They're running down the court as a team. 4 or 5 of their players. If it's 4, it's Sabonis getting the ball out of the basket. He's inbounding it, and now he's coming down the trail, and you got 4 guys you got to worry about. If it's 5, they're all running, especially off a make, they're all running down into the front court. What happens when you have shooters and skilled players who are running at high speed and doing things in a matter of 2 to 3 seconds instead of 6 or 7 seconds, is that it forces the defense to react all the time. They can't relax. And so you've got these cross matches. You've got the, who am I guarding? How do I get here? And that's what the Pacers do. The Kings do it. Not every team does it. You can do it in the half court. You can do it in transition. You can do it off makes. But when you get into your actions super quickly, or when you push the ball right back at teams, you can have like a little 3-on-2 on the side of the court, and then it messes up the defense because someone else has to come help. That leaves someone open on the backside. It's just something that I don't think all teams are doing. And the unstated point there, I mean, you should see some of the comments on this video in terms of like the league doesn't play defense anymore and the refs are bailing everyone out. I think the refs have been much better about some of the physicality this season. I think what we're seeing is expanded beyond like massive free throw rates or anything like that. But going back to what I was saying, when you have teams that get out in transition, the unstated skill there is cardiovascular conditioning. They are in better shape than you. They are outrunning you. They are making high motor skill decisions and shooting the basketball at speed because of their training and their conditioning. If you don't do that defensively, the Pacers and the Kings come to town and they run you out of the gym. And that's why I think if like one of these teams played a team from 20 years ago, if they walked out of the old hypothetical time machine, it would be insane because they would just be running them off the court like they were out of shape. You know, the guys might be keeled over on the sidelines going, we need another timeout. How can we keep up with them? So you have skill in shooting that has evolved and that is making this possible. You have the scheme and obviously the Kings have this and the Pacers have this, and then you have conditioning. And these are massive, massive upgrades that I don't think every team has tapped into yet.
We talked about that a little bit when Kyle was on the show in terms of like, it's actually really important to be in great cardiovascular shape. Like maybe there's less of an emphasis on just being like a stocky, I put on some weight over the off season, I'm going to bang down low. Like you actually, it's very difficult, Ben, to put on a lot of muscle and be in really good cardio shape. Like obviously these guys are able to do it, but during the season, you're going to lose some of that muscle. What's interesting though, is taking this full circle here, is that the Magic, like what you were talking about with their guards, sort of do the opposite thing, right? So the Pacers are constantly pushing the pace, okay? But the Magic are limiting opponent pace, right? They're getting their guys out there and stopping these actions from happening. So by the time they're getting into an action, 14 seconds left on the shot clock, 13 seconds left in the shot clock. And that makes it so much tougher to figure out, to catch the defense off guard, because they're the ones dictating it. We keep going back to it. It's all about dictating the matchup here. The Pacers dictate it because they're like, hey, we're going to run and you're going to be all over the place and we're going to get some easy threes and layups out of it. The Magic are like, hey, we're going to station our guys here and not let you get to catch us off guard, and you're going to have to fight through everything here. So it's an interesting dictating of pace where I think when they met recently, didn't the Magic beat the Pacers fairly handily? Isn't that a thing that happened, or am I making that up?
The Magic defended the Pacers maybe better than anyone in the entire NBA has in 2024.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think that's the thing, is you can't just let the Pacers sprint into these actions, right? So if you watch, if you like zoom out and you're watching these possessions in the half court and you're like, there's no way to stop the Pacers. Yeah, you're right. Because they've already won if they've crossed the half court and they're getting into those actions. If you set people up a little bit and you're like, we're going to slow you down coming forth, I think that's what you have to do. Get them feeling a little bit dizzy and not able to sprint into the actions they want to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty fascinated in general by just looking at the shot clock intervals throughout a possession and saying like, what happens in early offense? You know, I sent you a clip of Jonathan Isaac shooting a wing three with 14 seconds left on the shot clock. And even worse, 18 seconds left on the game clock. They were holding it for the last shot in the quarter. And it's like at that interval in the possession, the last thing you want is a bad shooter shooting a rush shot. That's the last thing you want. Defensively, though, if you take away that first action, now you're giving the offense less time to work with. Another benefit of a team like the Pacers or the Kings going early and both running continuity sets with a lot of players involved in movement and screening is that when you're let's use the Kings from last year because we did a ton of work on them in video. You come down the court, you run that first set, Kevin Huerter flows to the corner, Sabonis goes up to play two-man with Fox. Cody, there's 17 seconds left on the shot. You've gone through a series of sets that can puncture 20% of the defenses or whatever, and now you're going into your next action. There's 17 seconds left on the shot clock. You got to defend like three or four more of those as a defense to make it through the entire possession. You compare that to like a James Harden possession where he's walking up the court at 2 miles an hour, waiting till the shot clock gets to 15 before the screener comes to him. And then the screen comes, and I don't know, maybe they weren't expecting the coverage and they didn't get the switch or the play they wanted out of it. And then you reset. That's my favorite. This is what I mean by the intervals in the shot clock. If you're resetting and your second action is like a slow, hey, we got to figure out what to do. We're going to run late clock pick and roll with this guy. And there's 8 seconds left on the shot clock. The defense is at such an advantage there compared to, I got to do work at 21 on the shot clock. I got to do work at 16. I got to do work at 11. Oh God, there's still 8 more to go. And I think that's what these good offenses are doing by playing with pace. And to your point, when you're a good defense, I always watch that. Like, when you take away the first action, how are they able to recuperate and try to get something in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock?
And that's a key part for why the Kings are so much more successful when Fox is out there, right? Like, when you have Sabonis playing his little delay action, Ben, you got him at the top of the key, and he's kind of dribbling around, and you have Herter. Maybe he's going to twirl these screens over here. Maybe this guy's going to make a 45 cut. People are just sprinting all over the place. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen here. But, like, once you get in the rhythm of defending that, right, there's not necessarily a backup plan, which is fine. Like, there's plenty of built-in backup plans. But De'Aaron Fox, I don't remember, I think I saw it over Twitter. I think Mike, our video coordinator, talked about this too. Maybe he talked, I don't remember. Someone was talking about it in my circle. But there was a game recently where they ran like a high horn set, like a high screen and roll type of action, double screen action, where Fox was just getting downhill. They ran it like 17 times. I think Mike Brown said it in the post-game presser, where he's like, we ran this play like 20 times. And De'Aaron Fox's blinding speed and the way that they're able to space the floor out and everything just makes it nearly impossible to defend, given that along with the fact that Fox is a great finisher, like one of the best, like, and one guys relative to the amount of 2-point fouls he draws. That's just another dynamic element to their offense that, you know, it's great on its own, but when you add that dynamic element, like the Pacers, it's kind of impossible unless you're, like, preemptively stopping the action from beginning.
Yeah, that was from the Kings-Timberwolves game, and our other great video coordinator, Jason Fung, put that into your brain, Cody. He was talking about the pick and rolls over and over and over again. All right. Well, I don't know if we got an answer on what we believe in this show. Did we have any more do we believes to answer before we get out of here?
Here. This is going to be maybe a I don't think this is.
This
mean.
Is a bonus? You have a bonus?
I do. Okay. I'm going to reframe the question here. I'm going to rephrase it. Would you believe me if I said that Giannis is leading the league in travel violations by a significant margin this season?
Would I believe you?
Yes.
Yes, I would believe you, yes.
So if you look at per 100 stats, I was really deep in the stats, man. I was really deep in them.
Your candy store metaphor, actually. Now I'm starting to understand it more. Okay, continue. Yes.
Listen, I'm eating the chocolates. I'm not a big candy guy, so I was going to list a bunch of candies. It's not even like I'm built different. I just don't necessarily like candies. Give me some baked goods. I have a sweet tooth, but
What is your favorite like candy bar?
Favorite candy bar, officer? Those aren't ours.
This is the quietest Cody's ever been. He doesn't.
Wow,
candy bar.
I guess this is that's a good thing if I'm on a podcast. Favorite candy.
Well, what is? Yeah, what like a wrapped? I mean, it doesn't have to be a bar. I guess
I'll say M&Ms. I guess.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean.
You know, As Mitch Hedberg would say, like, M&Ms are great when you're hungry and want to eat 2,000 of something. Like, they're perfect for that sort of thing. What was I saying? Stats. So, Bam Adebayo is second in the league in travel violations called on him at 0.72 per 100 possessions. Giannis, at number one, is a whopping 1.6 travel calls per 100 possessions. Double the person in second place. And honestly, Ben, that number's probably a little low. I think it's honestly probably closer to two up there. I saw it. It blew my mind. That's incredible. That's a lot of wasted possessions. Let's not do that, Giannis. Let's not.
To support us, check out patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. That is where you can get most of these stats. Sorry, Cody. I didn't know we were supposed to put up travels per 100. I can add that to the board for you if you'd like. patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. You get some extra content up there. We have a community and more. What are you looking forward to this week before we talk again. Are you going to be dialed into the NBA Cup games tomorrow?
Honestly, this should be a question I ask you. Like, what teams are you watching going into tomorrow's games? Like, what should I, as somebody that hasn't been tracking this stuff, what should I be watching for?
The Golden State Kings game. That is an interesting one, because if the Warriors win that game and the Kings lose, and then I think it's Houston who's also in that group wins. If they lose, then the Warriors would advance and the Kings would have to get through into the wild card. There's all these wild situations where, because it's a head-to-head tiebreaker, if there's only two teams that are 3-1, right? And so the Warriors would beat the Kings, so they would have the head-to-head tiebreaker. Both teams would be 3-1 in the group. The Warriors would go through. But there's so many situations that are going to happen tomorrow where there could be a three-way tie, and a third team could be 3-1, and then you don't go to head-to-head. Then you go to points because it's three teams. Yeah, it just... It's gonna be a wild, like, 1 hour of people trying to figure out, as the games close, who advances and what the scores are. I'm telling you, they need, like, a little board. They should have a little board on a bunch of the games, just, like, tracking how many more points they need to gain on the Cavs or something.
Do they not have... Okay, we're gonna Google on air. You're hearing it live right now. NBA Cup big board.
Well, this isn't live, because we have to record it and then put it up.
Well, it's live for me and you. Right.
Everything's live for me and you, though.
Everything? Like,
yeah.
Like a rival kind of everything, or like what you're experiencing in the present everything?
Yeah, the latter. Okay. Yeah.
The latter.
Although Arrival, that's quite a movie.
Man. We could probably do a sci-fi episode at some point. I think both of us have a love for sci-fi movies. Arrival's right up there. It's a great flick.
Were you looking something up, or were we going to end the show? Sorry.
I tried, but when I looked it up, I just got like a big board from 2023 of college players, and like, I just...
Wait, what were you looking up?
I'm trying to figure out, like, if there's a, like, equation and stuff to figure out for the NBA Cup. So I typed in NBA Cup big board, and then I get top 100 players of 2023. That's not at all what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you just trust me when I tell you that, you know, Boston would win their group with a 23-point win or more over Chicago and a Nets win over Toronto. That'll wrap it up for the Celtics. But also, the Celtics could get in with a wild card with a win and a Cleveland and New York and Miami and Brooklyn loss, or with a Knicks win and a 19-point differential gained on the point differential against New York if New York were to win their game.
Honestly,
easy to follow, right?
I'm less excited about the NBA Cup now.
Jeez. Thanks for watching this one with us, and we hope you're having a great day.